On the telephone line from Defector.com, the Distraction Podcast, we say hello to our friend David Roth. Hello there, Mr. Roth.
Hey, man. How are you?
Well, you know, like you Mets fans, I've caught it. Pennant fever is going wild here in New England.
Nothing like being slightly surprised for the positive by a team you had low expectations for, is there?
That's
really just one of the best sensations there is.
Right. There's nothing better in sports than thinking, okay, I'm just going to enjoy this season, even though they're not going anywhere because I'm loyal to my team, and then all of a sudden they're not bad.
Yeah, 2 months later, you've taken the Nick Pivetta pill, and you see the world in an entirely different light.
Oh, yeah. I take that every 5 days. I love it.
It's good for you. You got a lot of natural oregano oil and stuff in it.
Yeah.
The Mets are weird because they're winning, but I still don't really think they're very good. Like, the Sox looked great when they beat the Mets up earlier this year, but that was a low ebb for the Mets. Are you, like, actually in, or are you just kind of, like, doing the thing where you're like, well, the next few months might be fun. Let's see what happens.
That's where I am. I mean, because I look around, but I will say this, having watched all of the series with the Yankees this weekend, they're awful. I'm not worried about the Yankees, but I think the Blue Jays are better than they've shown so far. And Tampa Bay does their crazy little Tampa Bay thing with guys off the scrap heap. And the Red Sox are still trotting out Martin Perez and Garrett. I can't pitch if I can't cheat Richards every 5 days. So I don't know.
It's weird. Like the Rays, I've given up trying to predict what's happening there or how they're doing it at this point. You know, there's clearly something happening there. I'm very impressed by it. Honestly, the more I know about it, the less I'll probably like it, so I should just leave that be. But yeah, I think that the Richards thing is kind of sad. Tom wrote a post about that at Defector recently, that, like, I don't necessarily know. I mean, like, cheating is a big word to use for that sort of thing, but, like, he really, like, since that ban went in there, like, he really just doesn't look like a major league pitcher anymore. And that was a really cool sort of comeback story for a while. I mean, that guy barely pitched for, like, 5 seasons.
Yeah, and the first thing he said to the press was, well, I'm glad I'm in my 30s. I've had a pretty good run. It's a good career. So if it all ends now, which I think inspires confidence among your teammates.
Yeah, right. That's one of it's one thing to be, like, sort of lied to in a very obvious way, which is a very Mets thing, but they're like, he's day to day, and you can see the guy in the background, and he's actually, like, just on fire pretty much. But, like, something about getting the straight dope from a guy like that, where it's like, well, this is the end of the road for old Garrett. You're like, well, like, this, like, reverse psychology thing on yourself, because you're just making everyone upset. Like, this is not the way to go.
So I got some baseball cards in the mail today, David.
Congrats.
Thank you. Well, a friend of mine does a wonderful little baseball magazine called Zisk that he says...
I know it.
Oh, you know Zisk. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Mike Falloon sent along the latest copies of that, and there were some baseball cards included, and I'm looking at one right now, and I have no memory of this performance. I have a Jose Canseco card from 1999.
Ooh.
With his Blue Jays uniform on.
Oh, my God.
And I'm looking at this thinking, well, this was pretty much the end of the road for Canseco. This has to be a misprint. It claims that Canseco, even though he only hit .237, managed 46 homers and 107 runs batted in 98 with the Blue Jays.
In some ways, like, yeah, that sort of checks out. Like, a lot of weird things were happening in 1998. You know, like, America had fallen in love with the jangly pop of Jesus Jones or whatever. The spin doctors were on top of the world. I don't remember everything that was happening in 1998. That is certainly weirder than the spin doctors having two number one hits, though. How many homers?
46.
Gee whiz.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is, I barely remember the Toronto period. I think that, like, after the Oakland years, it's kind of like, I remember him, you know, with the Yankees and nobody was happy. I remember the ball bouncing off his head in Texas. I think that was Texas, or was that Boston?
That was Boston.
That was Boston.
And him actually,
like, the last place he was productive.
And he hurt his arm when they brought him into pitch in the end of a blowout.
Yeah, that's a classic Canseco sort of thing where, there's all kinds of reasons why his body might not have been as, you know, pliable and limber, pharmaceutical type reasons and stuff. But him going out there trying to throw 94 to prove a point to the haters is basically the most Canseco way to scrap a career that I can imagine.
Kerry has been fact-checking. What did you learn?
No, it is correct. He got 151 games in 98. So for him, that was a lot of games. He hadn't played in that many since 91.
I wonder what could have made it possible to avoid injury in those years.
Did indeed hit.
Probably went vegan.
I think that's it.
Did indeed hit 46 home runs with a .518 slugging percentage. And in 99, hit 34 home runs with an even higher slugging percentage.
Wow. So he also had, in Toronto?
Yeah, that was also in Toronto.
That's all blocked out of my baseball memory.
I'm sorry. No, 99 was with Tampa Bay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, because I remember the Tampa Bay period, like that, I think of as being kind of like the end. There was a period after that where he was playing for the Newark Bears when I had just graduated from college, and that was like ultimate layabout post-grad hours, like talking to my friends on the phone and be like, "Do you want to go to a Bears game? Like Lance Johnson just signed there. We could do it. But we could also just sit in your basement and drink like four beers. Would you rather do that?" And then we never went to a Bears game.
So we're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. This is back, I don't know, maybe about 5 years ago. We reached out to Canseco to come on the show. And he got right back to my producer at the time, Brian Stackpole. He got right back to him and said, "Yeah, what do you pay?" And Stack said, "Well, yeah, we don't pay guests." "Well, yeah, but you haven't had anybody on like me." "Well, we've had on some pretty good guests." And he listed a few. And he said, "Well, what can you do for me?" And I'm watching from the other room. I said, "Well, yeah, I would buy him some lobster. Tell him we'll send him some lobsters." So we tell him that, and he's like, yeah, 10 pounds of lobsters and like $2,500, and I'm good.
I mean, I respect the flex. I never even thought to ask. Like, I would have settled for, you know, whatever, something canned.
Right.
Like just some smoked sardines that you send to me via, like, normal post.
Right. Well, you know, the main connection, maybe some B&M baked beans are on your way.
Yeah, that would be terrific. We should set that up, actually. That, like, every time, like, one of those punch cards at the coffee store, every time I do 10 appearances, you send me some brown bread. You can send it, like, UPS ground. It's no rush. I know it's good for, you know, another 5 years.
Right. It's good until the next millennium, so I think you're fine there.
Good for Jose, though. If you don't ask, how are people going to know that you have lost your mind?
Right, and I think, you know, I think we had timed this up. We were participating in a charity wiffle ball tournament, and in our twisted little minds, we thought, if we can get him here, would we pay some money to get him here and have him just show up and be on our wiffle ball team? But then we decided, if we wanted to go that route, screw the money, we get Ozzy Canseco, and who's going to know the difference?
And that was the thing that they were doing with the Newark Bears, is they were both there. And Ozzy, like, the thing that you can say about Ozzy Canseco that no one can ever take away from him is that he looked exactly like Jose Canseco.
Right.
Physically. Like, in terms of as a baseball player, I think it was pretty easy, I think, to tell the difference. And that was, you know, you can see that on the back of their baseball cards. I think Ozzy would have done it for, like, I don't know, like crab instead of lobster. like, maybe some sort of, maybe Dogecoin instead of actual cash. I don't know if that was an option for you at the time.
We'll never know. I believe that Canseco ship has sailed. I have to ask you about the work that went into writing about Tom Cotton to really dig deep on a guy who I think we all have to be grateful of him stepping up to do what he can to protect our Olympians from the Red Menace.
Yes. Well, he wrote a very strongly worded letter, even by Tom Cotton standards, to Joe Biden, encouraging him. Well, mostly he doesn't want the U.S. team to go to China in 2022 for the Winter Olympics because they're not a friendly country. They're very nasty and very rude. And, I mean, all of that is true enough. I mean, like, it's China. Everybody knows about it. They just had the Olympics in Russia. You know, like, all kinds of crappy places get Olympic bids and World Cup bids. And everybody sort of knows what it's about. But the letter that he had, beyond the usual kind of like posturing and stuff about like, you love China, like Joe loves China, look at him, like, which is the ordinary like Republican gambit now. There was a lot of stuff in there from not even fringy think tanks, just like, you know, war positive DC think tanks about Chinese theft of American DNA so that they could build biologically engineered super soldiers who would be able to fight at high temperatures or high elevations and presumably be really good at hockey or speed skating. I didn't really get all of it. It made very little sense. But it was one of those things where every time I clicked the link in the letter, something crazier than I had ever seen opened up.
Oh.
Like, there's all these, like, bizarro sort of self-styled experts. One guy was like, yeah, they're going to get DNA from all these Olympians. Like, they're going to be pooping a lot. Trust me. You can get DNA from that. And it was just, like, one of these guys where, like, a moment that you might have in a bar where you make eye contact with the wrong person and you lose 15 minutes.
Right.
But, like, that guy's written books. Like, and he was, you know, it's somebody that clearly Tom Cotton is reading. So.
Yeah.
Now, what you want.
I caught a little bit of the highlights, if you can call them that, of Trump's return to the road. And to relate it to sports, I don't know. It was sad. It felt like that guy who had one good season back in about 1964, but he's still coming to the card shows, but no one's at his table.
Yeah, the thought that I had was the way that Al Bundy used to talk about his high school football exploits. Like, there's something kind of, like, it gets harder and harder to remember what it was that the guy actually did as he gets more and more sort of small time. Some of it is, like, linking up with Mike Lindell, who I think, you know, for whatever his traits, I can't speak for the pillow. I've never used his pillow. But he definitely does not know how to throw a party. Every time I see a shot of one of those rallies that he throws for, like, Trump and, you know, whatever, like, it's all, like, it's some sort of version of Lollapalooza where, like, Marjorie Taylor Greene's name's in really big type on the poster. Like, it's nightmarish. But it's always, like, folding chairs in direct sun with, like, in the middle of, you know, nowhere in Ohio or Kentucky or Minnesota. And it just looks like these people just sit there for, like, 3 hours watching people just kind of recite Tucker Carlson monologues back at them. Like, I think you gotta, I don't, you know, add a midway or maybe like one of those teacup things that spin around really fast. Like, you have to provide something other than a chance to sit on a folding chair and have people lie to you.
Joe Piscopo singing isn't enough for you?
Oh, was he there? Did he do it? His Sinatra bit.
It was one of Lindell's previous ones. I don't think he was there.
That's great. One.
But he, that's, you know, that's what Lindell can book.
I'm just happy anytime he gets mentioned.
Boy, and then if you can bring in some of the comedy stylings of the formerly funny Dennis Miller.
Yeah, that's kind of a grim one because it's weird. Like, I do remember finding Dennis Miller funny at times in my life. And the stuff that he does now, it's weird. It's like, the music is still there, but the lyrics don't make sense anymore. But it's all happening along the same beats as, like, a comedy routine. So you hear him doing it, he's like, and like, oh, I should be laughing now. But, like, he just said something about Q. Like, this isn't working for me at all.
Right.
And that's no way to go through the last... At least Piscopo seems happy. That guy just puts on a fancy suit every day and, like, really sincerely believes that he's Frank Sinatra until the moment he goes...
Exactly. David Roth with us here on Downtown. Caught the latest episode of The Distraction. I love the Jim Caviezel story that you shared. Oh, my word. I mean, he's gone, isn't he? He's completely nuts.
Yeah. It's too bad, too, because I do remember him being a pretty good actor. I never watched... A friend of mine loved Person of Interest.
I did, too. I really enjoyed that show.
Yeah, and it seems like everything I've read about it, like, it's not just him. Like, the show really was good. But the interview, this was from a podcast. I was basically recapping it on ours. But just something happened to Caviezel where he got the... It's a disease that a lot of people get, where you just start believing every single Facebook post that you read as if it's entirely true. And he became this... Like, basically, you couldn't work with him because he would, like, anytime somebody slowed down or made eye contact on the set, he'd be like, hey, did you know that many aliens are already in the United States Senate? And you just have to listen to him keep talking until he gets tired. Which is remarkable. And there's, yeah, I mean, they wouldn't let him drive a car because he was too weird and he would, like, almost run people over because he's like, I'm a character. Like, this is how I would do it if I were this guy. And it was, I don't know how many people are, it really makes you appreciate how professional Mel Gibson must have been, because he's been that crazy for 20 years, but, like, he always shows up on time and seems to remember his why.
Exactly.
Like, that is all it really takes to keep working together.
I enjoyed the Josh Whedon discussion as well, as somebody who has liked Whedon shows in the past, and now when I watch them, I think, okay, like, Firefly I still love, but that's because I love the cast so much, but some of the others I sort of feel guilty for enjoying.
I'm sure that Firefly and Buffy are good. I miss them the first time around, but a lot of people, you know, that I'm friends with whose judgment I respect really do like them. I just think it's weird. Like, I think this happens to a lot of kind of, like, path-breaking writers. Like, beyond what a a tyrant Whedon was supposed to be on the set and everything. I think for sort of similar with Aaron Sorkin, like guys that invent a style and inhabit it very fully, like at some point, if you're just writing in sort of the same voice over the course of decades, like not only will you come to believe your own stuff in the way that I think Sorkin does at this point, but like you kind of just, you top out, you start repeating yourself, you know, and that's, it's sort of normal. Like you could push yourself a little bit, I guess, but like, why would you need to do that? You have $100 million and you're Joss Whedon, you know?
Yeah, I always feel that way about...
I saw the movie and liked it pretty well.
Yeah, I always feel that way about... And maybe he was never good. Maybe it was The Hook that got me, but poor M. Night Shyamalan, who's been sentenced to decades of making the same movie.
He seems very happy to be doing it, but yes, I agree. I mean, I think that's not an inaccurate description of where his career is right now, but like he's having a blast. Like all that... I think that he's not my favorite filmmaker, but I think that for a guy that like really decided that what he wanted to do was make movies with a big twist in the last 15 minutes and live in the Philly suburbs and make his movies in the Philly suburbs, you cannot say that he has not accomplished that. Like, absolutely hit that goal out of the park. Some people aim higher. Some people really love the Philly suburbs.
Well, and again, even his worst movie, better than anything I've done, so who am I?
I don't know about that. You saw the one where the plants turn on the people?
I did. Oh, yeah, good point. All right.
I think that's, you've done many, many shows. Like, I feel like a lot of your live ad reads are way better.
Well, you know why, David? And the reason is out there now, you and Drew put it out there. It's because for years I've been using a performance enhancer. Right before I go on, I chew a couple of sticks of Juicy Fruit.
A goofy moment on the podcast to have just a little throwaway joke I made led to my coworker singing an entire jingle from television back at me. This is the hazard of live broadcasting or even recorded broadcasting. You never know when someone's going to start like describing a Big Red ad from when they were a child to you.
Well, I agree completely with your analysis of both Juicy Fruit and Big Red that they both had a unique purpose.
Yeah, the brands were there. Like, I mean, Big Red was definitely, like, that was for smooching, and that was cool. I mean, I was a little, as a child, I was like, I'm not ready for that gum. I don't think that I'm really. Juicy Fruit was weird because it was definitely the gum that you do, you know, you put in your mouth right before you attempt a super extreme sports move that's definitely going to make you swallow your gum. But I appreciate that anybody even had that idea for a brand. They were like, it's for skydivers and kite surfers, and it's very dangerous to them.
Oh, dear. I just got a text from our friend Alan Adams who says, in all caps, how dare you besmirch The Happening?
The Happening is, I sort of recommend it to people because it's one of the great Mark Wahlberg tries to act like a normal person performances. He's definitely just playing like a put upon suburban dad and I think science teacher in that. And he's not the sort of thing where, like, now he just, like, looks like The Rock and he's always really huge. And there's the first act of any movie where he's supposed to be just, like, a guy that works at H&R Block. But he's got, like, a lot of visible veins in his neck. He looks more normal in it, but he does not seem more normal in it.
No. All right, listen, I don't want to cause any family stress here. But I have to ask, and you put it out there on social media, what the hell is going on in your wife's aunt's shed?
Yeah, Aunt Karen, Lewiston, Maine native, now living in Ulster County, New York, is really into Halloween decorations. We drove around upstate this weekend. It was really nice. More and more I can see why people choose not to live in New York City all the time. But we visited her. She had, you know, during the pandemic period, everybody sort of dedicated themselves to getting better in some ways. She built a shed and then filled it with her Halloween decorations very neatly. But the image that Rich is referring to is just a bunch of horrible skeletons in clear blue plastic bags hanging on hooks that she hung in a very orderly row as I'm trying to think of like Leatherface might do it.
Right.
It's a very unsettling image. And she's such a, we were so happy to see her. Like, she had all her friends up there. They were all celebrating. And she's like, let me show you the shed. And it's just like, yeah, shovels, bags, skeletons, like suspiciously lumpy duffels thrown on shelves. I know her well enough to know it's not as sinister as it looks. But yeah, I did put that photo there just because I wanted people to know.
And it's the order and the organization that I think takes it to the next level.
It absolutely makes it scarier to me. Like, it was the sort, if it was just, I mean, a pile of skeletons in a shed isn't what you want either. Anybody just joining the show now, like, my apologies for where we are in this. But, yeah, something about bagging them up. It had, like, a real sort of, maybe not even a horror movie, like, maybe more like Sicario or something, you know, like, it was sort of a cartel work. But that's, I mean, she worked in the Parks Department in New York City for many years. I think that, like, you know, you get used to keeping a clean workspace, and then right. eventually you just swap your rakes for plastic skeletons.
I have to ask you, I meant to bring this up earlier when we talked baseball. Can you get yourself excited for a Phoenix-Milwaukee NBA Finals if that's the way we're headed?
I am working on it. I think that whatever team winds up winning is going to be tarred as the most fraudulent champion ever. And, you know, like, that's going to be a little bit unfair, but probably not 100% unfair. I think the Suns are really good. The Bucks and the Hawks series, I really haven't gotten that much out of, but I do like that the four teams that are left seem more or less to have been chosen at random from the playoff field as it existed. Like, I had absolutely convinced myself that the Nets were going to flip the switch and just kind of cruise through to it. And I still think if everybody was healthy, that's probably what we're watching right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been interesting. The Bucks are weird. Like, Giannis really is great, but also he kind of can't do a lot of things. And so it's really peculiar to watch them. Like, I think that anytime he's given the ball and sort of tasked with creating, it's like, you know how, like, Tom Cruise, like, runs in a certain way in movies?
Yes, I do.
Like, it's, like, the only way he knows how to move from one place to another. Like, that's kind of Giannis just, like, dribbling the ball really fast back and forth and then just describing a straight line to the front of the hoop. And, like, it's cool when it works. And then at other times you're like, no one can teach this guy a spin move. Like, he can do everything. But, yeah, there's not a lot in the bag there for him yet. But Middleton's been great. I mean, like, I'm enjoying the Suns. I'm enjoying how cussed and stubborn Chris Paul is. And I don't know. I'm talking myself into it. We only got, like, so many more basketball games left.
Yeah, you're convincing me. David Roth of Defector.com, The Distraction. When's your trip to Maine? Is that coming up in the next month or so?
We are 1 month out. Yeah, we're coming up late July. We're going to hang around in Hancock County through the middle of August, and then we're going to come on back. But I am very, very much looking forward to it. My wife's got a bunch of spreadsheets with, like, we basically have meals planned down to the lunch for our time getting up there. But then once we're up there, it's just basically 10 days of sitting around and reading books and helping my father-in-law move large piles of rusty metal from his home to the transfer station.
Well, there, that's...
Yeah, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
That is summer in Maine in a nutshell. Well, David, we appreciate it. As always, great catching up with you, and we'll talk with you again before too long.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Take care.
David Roth. You're on Downtown.